are you gonna think differently? Did this just cement in the amazing things you're already doing? And you're like, yeah, yeah, shit.
Did you feel good that I'm not the only one that has the same question that doesn't have the answers on it?
Entire enterprise, but cultural systems can be specific to that particular brand. So we don't want ESPN to be Disney, because it's not. Sports is different. You know, we don't want Pixar to be ABC, different. You know, there's no Desperate Housewives on the Disney Channel for a reason. You know what I mean? There's no Mouse House on ABC or on ESPN for a reason. So we had to make that decision too. How far are we going to take it? Wow. So enterprise-wide, HR processes, systems are the same. The culture we must allow to be a bit different. Because if you squish who they're not who they are anymore. You know, you have to allow some leeway for them, you know, to exist the way they are. And keep it, you know, keep them in alignment. You know, they can't go too far this way or this way, but it's hard. Not easy.
Does ESPN, ABC, except for some of the other subsidiaries, mm-hmm. do they use a similar type of pre-culture video?
Yes.
But they're all just based on...
They're all different. Mm-hmm. Yeah, ESPN has really, like, gotten on the bandwagon. And their recruiting process is identical to the way you'd recruit in the park. It's just
sports related.
You're going to hear the words in fuego much more likely than you will at Disneyland or Disney World. When you become a recruiter, you have to go perform every role. I had to go, this was not really that much fun, I'll be honest with you. I placed 23 different roles. So before I could place anybody anywhere, I had to go work in those 23 different jobs. Now, I might only be there for a day and a half, but I had to go figure it out. So I know, hey, if you have people that don't like to talk, don't put them there. Because that you have to talk a lot at that place. So yeah, we had to go learn it. And we were all in charge and had to go learn it. Were somebody over here? Yes.
Yeah. Once you get people into that Harlequin building, how many interviews and words do they go through?
If you would come in, if you're hourly, you would come in and interview with one. If we like you, we're going to give you a job right then. And it's going to be pending background checks and things like that, you know. But we're going to offer you the job right then. So there's no, we liked him, but let's wait for maybe a better candidate, because you don't know if a better candidate's ever going to come. So we fill the rec right then. If you're salaried, you're probably going to have an interview with casting, and then if they like you, they're going to pass you to the area, and then the area is going to be allowed to interview you. So you could have several, but if you're hourly, you're going to get the one.
I have a question regarding with Disney. Does the general manager, or however you play, are they required to play the roles?
Yes.
Are they required to go and do the
as a merchandise manager, every quarter I had to have an in-costume experience. Yeah. So every quarter I would, I can tell you, I was really, really bad at my job at one of the merchandise shops that I managed, because one of them was a candy shop. And I was not good at pulling cotton candy. I just wasn't good at it. It's a skill, really. I mean, seriously, it's a skill. Because we pull ours, we don't twist it on the little thing. So I was required to go do it. And they thought it was the funniest thing ever. Put Austin in the kitchen. And it's not Disney language, but they'd love to be like, this shit sucks. Put her in there. So I did it, because it was embarrassing for me, and it was fun for them to see me mess up. And so yeah, you do it every quarter for a week. It's been 5 days.
And I think that's important, because that reinforces the overall culture, mm-hmm. as opposed to allowing have their own culture,
yep.
by saying we're all a part of the same thing, a bigger picture, and what does it look like for you?
Yeah. So. It's a great ego thing, man.
It also
you think
avoids your disconnect. Yeah, it avoids your disconnect between
Everybody loves ice. Everybody picks up trash.
Exactly.
You know, everybody. And that's why it was always important to me to go dip caramel apples, because I wasn't very good at it. You know, sometimes they had to fix my work. But I never wanted anybody to think she's not willing to do it.
Right.
You know, I would tell them, I'm willing to do whatever you ask me to do, but no, but I'm not very good at it. So, you know, my apples are going to be quite as pretty, and I guess they get my apples.
Part of that, though, isn't it? It's more important that they understand how the job's done.
Yes.
Versus whether or not they care whether you're really good at it.
Right.
At least you understand it.
At least I'm willing to go in there and stand on my feet for 8 hours or 9 hours or 10 hours if I decide to. And that was always part of what in merchandise, what all of us did. We would early release ourselves, like on one day, because sometimes cats get to do that, and we would extend ourselves someday. And we never knew. So we would always, we'd let our area manager pick what day. So I'd see Bonnie walking and I'd go, oh man, is she going to early release me or is she going to make me stay longer? Just like a cast member would. Just like a frontline elite cast member. So here she'd walk up to me and she'd go, you know, Austin, is it possible? Could you stay an extra couple hours tonight? Yes. And then you feel what it feels like to be on your feet for 10 hours digging apples on concrete.
You said that with a smile, right?
Yeah. Because, you know, I mean, we're all probably going to go, yeah, I love that. But we're happy to do it. You know, we're happy to do it. I'd rather the guest have a really ugly looking caramel apple than no caramel apple.
And Austin, did you say that was a quarterly requirement?
Yeah, it's
and
quarterly.
And that's still a quarterly requirement for anyone who doesn't normally work on the front line to go work on the front line. And
yeah.
That's at all levels.
Well, the only caveat to it is, you know, there are times when, for safety reasons, it's not appropriate to have you there. So if, you know, for example, I would have never been asked to work like a Halloween party. I would have never been, because for safety reasons, I'm the wrong person to have. I'm not going to do it right, probably. So there would be times, you know, when they would say, you know what, you know, normally you'd go out right now, but we're going to defer this. We want you to wait to do it to January. So there are times. I mean, there are, you know, Joseph, he's not in the back right now. He probably would take a call, but he's a great example. He's our senior leader. He runs the operational side of Disney Institute. And yet he's here and observing classes and, you know, and his first week back to Disney, it's funny, I can say, I've known him for 13 years. So his first week back, we went to him and said, Joseph, we know you're going to be back a week, so would you mind speaking to a group? He's like, sure. You know, so he will be required to learn the programs, go out and facilitate the programs with your team members. Every leader at Disney Institute is required to do that. You know, we can't, you just don't understand unless you do it too. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Well, we're all here in a learning forum. Is it okay to poll the group for a second and just ask who's ever done...
Rock on, brother.
Who's ever done the most entry-level job that they're in charge of? I mean, from executive level to whatever. I mean...
Wow!
Really?
Wow!
That's insane. That's great.
That's insanely cool.
Yeah, very cool, yeah.
And it's a great segue to talk about the next step.
Part of it may be, too, is our departments are small enough. Missing,
you're the one that has
in.
To do it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That's how our department is. I told you I don't facilitate. Most days I'm sitting in my office, you know, thinking about what the next thing is I'm supposed to be working on. I develop content. But I need to be prepared at any minute, you know, to put on nicer clothes and get out there.
It's any consolation. You don't look like you're rusty at it.
Probably not. But it's, you know, it's because lately I've been doing this a lot, this particular content a lot, which we'll get to. We're going to talk about particularly what you're seeing today at the end of the day. So training. You've hired this person now. So you brought them in. Has your selection process given the right tools and the right equipment to continue to push their placement to the right-hand side of the curve? We hope that you have now, in the selection process, you're pushing them a little. Because through deep cultural immersion and cultural match, creating excitement, you've been able to move them a little bit. So the next thing we have to do to shift the curve is the appropriate training. You know, even the best person in the world is not going to be ready to start their job without the appropriate training. So in order to sort of bridge that for us, to talk about the bridge between selection and training, Aaron Wallace, who's the Executive Vice President of Segment Operations Integration. Isn't that a fun title? Segment Operations Integration. Basically, that means she's the head of operations under Meg Crofton, who you just met earlier. So California, Florida, Paris. And we say segment operations because all of our operations are looked at enterprise-wide now. So it's no longer Disneyland does it this way, Disney World does it this way. We all, you know, in terms of things like operating an attraction or bringing in merchandise or things like that, it's integration between all operations. So Aaron is going to talk to you briefly about that bridge between selection and training.
Good work, everyone. Now, as part of your introduction to the company, what we're going to do is take a look at our heritage through a storyboarding activity. What we'd like you to do is take a look at those cards on your tables.
Hello, I'm Erin Wallace. When guests tell us about their Disney vacations, their stories always center on a cast member who made a dream come true. Guests expect our cast members to keep the magic alive, follow through and be courteous, listen to their needs, and then exceed their expectations. By focusing on finding the right person for the right role, we can find cast members who can deliver on those guest expectations. The next step in supporting our culture and the goal of delivering legendary guest service is training. That training begins on every cast member's first day of work, and it never ends, whether the cast member has been with us for 2 years or 22. We see the results of selection and training in hundreds of guest letters. The cast members in those letters do more than just tick off tasks. They serve with the intention to make dreams come true. Our training and coaching is ongoing. All cast members receive training and then ongoing coaching and feedback from their leaders in their work areas. One of our goals is to make training fun. Part of developing an emotional commitment to our product and sharing that with guests is ensuring that our cast members experience the magic. Our leaders strive to keep training relevant so that it reflects how our culture works in today's world and is designed for today's cast members and guests who are very diverse and come from all over the world. Training sets up our cast members for success as dream makers and makes our legendary guest service an everyday reality.
So what did you hear that you went, ooh, that's interesting? Yes, sir?
Make training fun.
Make training fun. Should be fun, right?
It's ongoing.
Ongoing. Training never stops. I was just sharing with them up here. I get home on Saturday morning. I take the red eye on Friday night. Monday, I have 4-hour safety training. It's mandatory that I have to go to. And it happens all the time. I love the training sets our cast members up as dream makers. Dream makers. Wow. Pretty cool. Make dreams come true. Anything else that you heard that you want to do? All right, we're going to jump into training by talking about underinvestment. So you hire great people, they will not be successful no matter what. You can't simply hire them and then underinvest in the development required to get them to desired behaviors. This is that whole idea that I had said hope is not a business strategy. You can't hire them and hope they'll do well. You have to hire them and bring them in with a lot of intentionality around training. And this is, you know, really important to our ideas around training. Training is more critical to desired behaviors and outcomes than most companies have ever imagined. Why do you believe training matters? So just your own personal, why does training matter? Oh, I love that. I love that comment. It sets the standard. What other reasons?
Consistency.
Creates consistency. What else?
Helps people be the best alternative to their position.
Okay, say that one more time.
Helps people be the best alternative to their position.
It helps people. helps sort of prove that they're the best choice? I'm not understanding, I'm sorry.
Yeah, it helps them represent that they're the best option. If that's the reason they're in that position, they're the best option for that position.
They become, yeah. Awesome. What else? Communicates that you care about them. You want them to be good.
It's an opportunity for positive reinforcement.
Yeah. It's positive reinforcement. We can reinforce in the good stuff and reinforce out the bad stuff.
Promotes change and adaptability.
Promotes change and adaptability. That whole spelling thing just left me for a minute. Yeah, if you know what alternatives are, if you're well-trained in your job, then you know how to move and flex if you need to. What else, huh?
Immediately engages the employee and they feel valued.
Yeah, boy, you can't talk a lot about that. It's immediate engagement. And don't I feel really important? You know, when you're immediately engaged with, you come to work on that first day and there's somebody there going, "Hey, Britt, I'm so excited to see you. I've been waiting for you all week. I've known you were coming." You just kind of puff up a little bit. Yes.
It may dovetail on that, but human beings have a psychological and an emotional need for growth. They always have to be moving forward, or they get bored, complacent, in a rut.
Yeah, it avoids that. So it avoids ruts. Yeah, we need to feel like we're moving somehow. You know, even if the movement is like this, that's okay. We're still moving. Those are all great, great reasons for why training matters. So in that spirit of why training matters, then why do we sometimes train here? Because you've given me all these amazing reasons why training matters. But sometimes, when you go for training, this is where you go. Has anybody ever been trained in a room kind of like this?
Yes. Standard HR orientation.
Yeah. And this was being used as a lunchroom before we got there. And so it's like, oh, we have to leave. We can't eat our lunch here. So if we're saying that training does all of these things, and it's more powerful than we could imagine, what does this training room say?
Not important.
You're not that important. I may have said you were important, but that was all a big facade. You're really not all that important.
And it's not even the expensive details that are saying unimportant. It's things like the mismatched chairs, the crooked picture.
The papers on the desk.
Yeah. Well, they were eating there before. So they were messing around drawing stuff.
That kind of debris over by the wall.
Yeah.
People say budget, but it's not the expensive thing that sends a message.
It's not. You could be in a very plain room that is still dressed appropriately and be fine. You don't have to have a fancy place to train, but you should have a clean place to train and one that was created with intentionality.
Mm-hmm. That really says to me that that company likes to do things halfway. I mean, you have shredded piece of paper. I couldn't even spend the time to finish shredding that piece of paper.
Right.
So, you know, the little things, how are you going to spend those big things?
Right. So it sends a huge message about the company and what the company values, what the company really values. And I will tell you, there's a lot of positive effects of training, but there's a couple of things that can happen when you do get it wrong. People get frustrated when they do not know how to do their job, which has serious ensuing consequences. So evidence suggests that emotional engagement is the strongest driver of discretionary effort. So I'm going to say that again. Remember, we talked about engagement. There's two kinds. There's rational and emotional. Rational is typically the one that got you here. Emotional is the one that keeps you here. There is much research. I literally have a stack on my desk like this that shows me company after company after company that emotional engagement is the strongest driver of discretionary effort. so that extra plus it up. You will do that only when you are engaged emotionally. And frustration, guess what, kids? It's an emotion. So if emotional engagement is the strongest driver of discretionary effort and you have negative emotion, what do you got now in your organization? I like to call that poison. I heard the word toxic, I think. Yeah, that's like, I like to call that poison. So the internal impact, and we're on page 31 in your book of what can happen, the internal impact is your culture becomes eroded from the inside. This is the person who's completely disgruntled that has lunch with people and poisons them over lunch every day. The external impact is they poison your brand through social media, and social media is a huge one, where they can tell hundreds and hundreds of people at one time how horrible you are. So that's the external impact, huge impact to your brand. You know, and the internal impact scares me even worse. At the extreme, employees may sabotage your company. And what we mean when we say sabotage is share your company secrets, share company knowledge, steal from the company, could be physical things they steal, money they steal, could be knowledge they steal, or blog negatively. So what causes people to be frustrated in an organization? What might cause it? Does it ever happen in any of your organizations? It happens with us.
Lack of communication.
Nobody ever talks to me. I know nothing. Nobody ever talks to me.
I don't feel worthwhile.
I'm just another number.
Bad processes.
Processes are horrible. Yeah, there's all kinds of stuff I need. I don't have any tools to do my job. I have all this, and I'm supposed to make magic out of it. Yeah, I have not been heard. Because isn't there a real difference between being given the opportunity to speak and being given the opportunity to be heard? Two completely different things. They feel dismissed. They also, what frustration causes, and this is like my least favorite thing in the world, it's great if you're hired to do it. If you're hired to be a stand-up comedian or be on like the TV show Saturday Night Live, improvisation is a beautiful thing. But if you're hired to do a specific role, improvisation is really scary. And it's funny, there was a the burger chain that you brought up a little bit earlier. I have a coworker who came to California. He'd never been to that burger chain, the one that's prevalent here that we don't have in Florida. He was so excited to go there. And he walked in the door, there were three cashiers, and there was nobody in line, and he walked up to him and he went, I've never been here before, I'm so excited to be here. Can you tell me, like, what's on the secret menu? And the person there said, secret menu? I don't know what's the secret menu. Is there a secret menu? And he goes, come on, seriously, I'm so excited to hear what's the secret menu. And that next person said, secret menu, well, what were you thinking you might want? And he said, well, can you make me a grilled cheese? And she said, sure, I can make you a grilled cheese. And he goes, well, what else can you make me? If you can't make me that, what else can you make me? Well, I'd make you a grilled cheese. And the third person said, and you know what's sometimes really good? If you get french fries with like everything on it. We'll put everything on the french fries. Like chili and cheese and blah, blah, blah. So he left there not knowing any more than when he got there. They're a great company. I mean, they're awesome organization. But they have one little training issue. And the training issue is, there needs to be an answer to the question, what's on the secret menu? And maybe the answer is, I don't know about any secret menu. Maybe if you looked online, there might be more information. Or, what, you know. But there needs to be an answer to that question, because he got three different answers. They all improvised because they didn't know the answer. They knew the answer. The answer was, you know, this is Fight Club. We don't talk about Fight Club. You know what I mean? That was the answer. We don't talk about the secret menu. But none of them knew exactly how to answer that question, so they all improvised. And again, and we're talking about a company that's a great company. That's a great company. But they just have one little tiny training thing. You know, that happens to us at Disney all the time. You know, we just find a little training thing and go, oh, we need to tweak that, don't we? We go tweak it, make it better so that we don't have that issue again.
So what are the boundaries as far as setting specific guidelines? But allowing and empowering them to meet guest needs by
Are you here tomorrow? Okay. So the easy answer to that is, if you are going beyond policy and you're doing it to assist the guest, it's completely fine. If you're going outside policy to make the world easier for you, that's different. But if you're going outside policy and it benefits the guest, you're empowered to do that. Because ultimately it's the guest experience that's the focus. Now, there's caveats to that. If it's not safe, don't do it. You know. That's why you heard Meg say, we had to let that family know, you can't have your doll back right now. Because there's safety gear that has to be donned to go get that doll. We don't know exactly where it is. We need to make sure it's okay to get in there. So that was sort of the quick and dirty answer. But myself or Bruce or Ryan can delve into it more at lunch if you want to. So you have to know that this is, you know, going to be the focus of our conversation about training. All training must deliberately reinforce culture in addition to imparting skills. You've heard this before, right? So this is the next place where you have to continue to reinforce your culture. In addition to making sure that they have the appropriate skill set to do the job that they need. Every training opportunity you have is an opportunity for cultural reinforcement. You don't get these opportunities very often. You know, you don't get people in a room very often to be able to do this. So take every one of those events very seriously. Even if it's two people. Even if you only hired two people or you hired one person, that is still a training event. And that training event should be full of cultural immersion because it sends massive signals about what you value as an organization and how you value those people. Massive signals. There is one particular critical training moment that happens in every organization. What do you think that is? Onboarding, the very beginning. Because it's the first one, it's probably the first engagement with this new hire. And what typically happens on those training days, and I will tell you, this is our real Standards of Business Conduct book, and that is our real Disney Employee Policy Manual. I scanned those from the two I had on my desk. Aren't they pretty? Why are they not pretty? They're not the focus. You know, this is not the focus of your onboarding experience. So if we made it all beautiful and put pictures on it and stuff, you would believe it was the focus of your onboarding experience, but it's not. Remember I said at casting, we left our friends at casting, you get the job on the spot, pending background check. We call you, your background check passed, can you come in and do your paperwork? At most orientation days, do you see these books? Yes. And you walk through them and you read through them and you sign 15 or 20 times and you're smiling while you do it, but it's still not fun. And you walk out that day, your first training, and you go, bleh. That was not fun at all, to your point. That was not fun. I didn't have fun that day. So we don't do any of this on your orientation day. Yes, it's part of the onboarding experience. But it happens before orientation. You go back to the casting building, you sit down with someone, they give you this beautiful folder that's full color, and they give you all kinds of full color wonderful things about the credit union and our sports leagues and all the stuff you can be a part of, and then you get these white books. There's one place to sign in each book, and you're done. And then, the real fun happens. Then you get to go to orientation. So before we get to orientation, I want to ask you a question that's on page 32 in your guide. Where do you fall? You don't have to say it out loud. Just place a dot on the line to indicate where you think your onboarding process falls on the culture versus process spectrum. And if it doesn't fall close to the left, you have an opportunity to make that change. So remember, you know, everything we've already talked about, the four components of your culture, heritage and traditions, language and symbols, traits and behaviors, shared values, the four things we talked about. Your onboarding, the orientation part of your onboarding process is really the prime time to get this right. So, how do you do it? Page 33 in your book, we've given you a checklist. Share heritage and traditions through stories. Create emotional ownership by sharing organizational values. Communicate the organizational identity using language and symbols specific to your organization. Communicate the traits and behaviors that define internal and external service strategies and create a sense of pride in working for your organization. There's the steps. That's what you want to include. You can put a big circle around it with your yellow highlighter. That should be in your orientation program. Orientation happens all around the world at a place called Disney University. This is Disney University in Florida. Disney University is inside the Team Disney Anaheim building here in California. Disney University is inside the Cast Services building at Hong Kong Disneyland. It's also inside a Cast Services area at Disneyland Paris. At Disney World, we have the largest cast of people. That's why we have the full building. So at Disney University, all training for parks and resorts happens. It happens worldwide at a Disney University. Not this one, they don't all come to Florida, but every park has one. No guest ever goes to this building. This is for cast members. This facility is well maintained, it's immersed in culture. Some line of business training happens here. We have themed rooms, so for example, we have mock guest rooms so that you can learn how to make a bed properly, or you can learn how to clean a bathroom, or so all of that is there. Disney traditions. Pardon?
I thought you said training was fun.
We make it fun. We make it fun. I learned that making beds is much harder than I thought it was. We have really cool tools, though, to help make it easier. Disney traditions is your first day of work. It's your orientation program. Disney traditions is taught by frontline people, managers and hourly folks. There's a 4-5 stage process. It takes 4 or 5 months to become a Disney traditions facilitator. It's an audition process. It's a little bit like American Idol. It feels like American Idol. Having gone through it, it felt like American Idol to me. So the traditions facilitators, when they are chosen, who do you think meets them to greet them and welcome them to becoming a traditions facilitator?
Mickey Mouse.
Mickey Mouse, that's right. Mickey Mouse meets them. Pretty cool, huh? You leave your work environment 3 or 4 times a month. We call it cross-utilization. And you would go to Disney University and teach this class 4 or 5 times a month. You do it for a year. It's like being Miss America. Do it for a year, and then you move on, and the next group comes in and does it. Why do you think we only let you allow you to teach for a year? Yes. So it doesn't become stagnant. It's always fresh. It's always fresh. It's always a new set of eyes. Yeah. I taught traditions in the year 2000. It was the best. For me, it was the best year and 4 months. It ended up being 16 instead of 12. Best year and 4 months, you know, I ever have. The traditions department learned that a year and 4 months was actually okay. So now you teach traditions for 2 years. Because what we've learned is it takes about 6 months to really hit your stride. Then you have a year to just have fun. And then your last 6 months, it's very nostalgic and there's pride. It's like hand. So what I'd like to do is just for a moment, if you would imagine with me that you wanted to be a Disney cast member, and then imagine with me that you had chosen a role that you wanted to perform, whether it be a costume character, or in merchandise, or operations, or lifeguard, or you imagine in your head a position that you might want to have. And I'm going to ask you to play along with me as we send you through just about 14, 15 minutes of Disney traditions. So I'd like to welcome your Disney Traditions Facilitator, Brian.
Good morning, everyone. How y'all doing today?
Yeah.
Come on, good morning.
Morning.
Oh, that's much better, much better. Welcome to the Walt Disney Company. Welcome to Walt Disney Parks and Resorts, and welcome to the Disneyland Resort. Congratulations for making it here. Are you excited to be part of the Walt Disney Company?
Yes!
I see it in your eyes, obviously a lot of great roles we have you working in. You know, our recruiters also saw something in your eye. They saw a twinkle in your eye. They saw the magic that you can create by working part of the Walt Disney Company. So we're so excited to have you here, part of this experience, and have you, working here at the company today. So I want you to think back, close your eyes for a moment, think back to your Disney memories, your Disney experiences, and think back to your favorite Disney memory. Once you have it, open your eyes, be a visual cue for me, and think about those Disney memories that you have, and all those memories that you've experienced as a guest. The cool thing now is, as cast members, you get to turn the table around, if you will, switch the table, and now create memories for our guests every single day when you come to work. So now you're the one creating memories, not the cast members out there creating them for you. You get to make dreams come true for our guests and for our fellow folks that are coming into our Disney parks or to our hotels. So part of that experience, though, as a Disney, is being courteous. We all, as cast members, have to be very courteous. So I'm going to teach you a lot of tools and tricks today through our 8-hour training period that we have. My name is Ryan, by the way. I'll be your facilitator, taking you through this course today. And I'm sure you have many questions like, hey, what am I going to do for my very first job? What does it look like to get out there in the area? Is it going to be a lot of information overload? Today is really about answering your questions for you and giving you the tips and tricks to succeed and be successful. So as we go through that, one tip I want to give you to start out is being courteous. Now, every Disney cast member is expected to be very courteous in their work locations, and one way to do so is how you point and give direction. Now, as we know, in many cultures, a single one-finger point can be considered offensive. And so here at Disney, we always use a two-finger point or open hand gesture. So give it a try. If you would, straight up, put your arms up. Okay, do two fingers, don't do single fingers, or open hand, perfect. Okay, and then we're actually going to do, to start things off, an activity. So with that same point you just chose, I'd like you at your tables to please point to your table leader. Go. Table leader, who is it? Don't be shy. Okay, table leaders, raise your hand, bunch of table leaders. You have one per table, perfect. Thank you. I know, it's not too painful, you can do it. Up here, the table leader, is it gonna be? Anna, congratulations, back over here, table leader. Perfect, okay, so here's what we're gonna do. We're gonna do a little activity here. Here's kind of the guidelines and the outline. It's gonna be a character activity. And I'm gonna give you 60 seconds, don't start yet, but leaders, you can scribe, or you can have someone at your table scribe, but one person's gonna write down in that 60 seconds as many Disney characters as they can list. Now again, don't start yet. There are a few rules to the activity. First of all, spelling does not count, so good news here. So the spell check's been completed for you, but we do ask that you list characters out individually. So those that are already thinking, okay, seven dwarfs, great, seven dwarfs, there's seven. Sorry, it doesn't work, either write out each of the seven dwarfs. Or Donald's three nephews, all three of them need to be written out. You only list Disney animated characters. So Mary Poppins, was she animated? No, it was the live action animation film, but she was never animated. Is that a Disney character? No, he is not a Disney character. So it must be Disney, and it must be animated. And again, you have 60 seconds to write them out. Go. Okay.
Dumbo. Jiminy Curtis.
Can anybody do the seven?
Yeah.
Can anybody do the seven? All seven.
Yeah. Grumpy, Snoopy.
That would be Duck.
Dopey Dog.
Bashful. All the princesses. Belle.
Cinderella.
Cinderella.
30 seconds left.
He's the witch too, right?
Maleficent.
What?
Oh, that was Maleficent? Yeah, it's Disney, right?
The prince.
15 seconds.
Prince Charming. Yeah. Ariel. Sebastian the Crab.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Time's up. Hands up, please. Okay, scribes, please do a quick visual, cross out any duplicates, and get a final count on your list of number of characters.
That's the bottleneck.
And once you have that, please quietly share it with your table, and then once everybody knows, please stand up. Yep. Everyone at your table. Once you know your number, please stand up. Okay, if you have 10 or more characters, please remain standing. 10 or more remain standing. Less than 10, you'll sit down. Good sign. Okay, we got the right folks in the room today. Great. 15 or more remain standing. 20 or more. Ooh, that's where it starts. Okay. Okay, 22 or more. And how many do we have here?
24.
24. Nice job. Very good. Don't have to see me. Should we trust them or should we check it out? Should we verify? Verification is always a good thing, right? We trust them, but we need to verify and make sure of the list. So if you would, nice and loud, please name off the characters. I'll let you all count them and tally them up. Keep me honest here. And if, before you start, if she gives a wrong answer or a wrong character, what are we all going to do in the room? We're going to make an audible sound. We're going to go, eh, right? The wrong answer sound. So go ahead and go, Nancy. Good. So you counted the total number, included SAD?
Yeah, so we got 23.
So 23, and it was 22 at both these tables? 20. Okay, great. So congratulations. You guys won. Give a round of applause. Very nice. I'll let you pass the hat here to pull out a Disney character for you. Very nice job on the activity. Now let me ask you, why do we do this activity to start things off this morning? It's engaging. Very good. Okay, teamwork, excellent job. We, here at Disney, we work in one large team. We are one family here at Disney, so we all contribute to the overall picture. I also heard somebody else say?
Shared knowledge.
Shared knowledge, very good. You all have Disney product knowledge. You all knew all those characters, pretty amazing. Took until 20 for the first table to sit down. You all have Disney experiences, so you might be coming in today a little nervous thinking, wow, I gotta learn a lot over the course of the next few days. This is gonna be pretty intense. The good news is you already have a lot of that product knowledge and a lot of that experience because you've been around Disney products. You've experienced them, you've been to our parks and resorts possibly. So we're going to ask you to leverage that knowledge and that experience because it actually is very valuable to your career here with the Walt Disney Company. And then what else do we do it? It's fun, right? Yeah, we're going to have fun, exactly. It's a nice little icebreaker to start things out today as we head on through our experience. Now, again, we're working as a team together at the Walt Disney Company. We are working as teams here in the room as well. Look amongst the room at all the faces that you see, because these are the folks that you're going to be seeing at your anniversary celebrations. You might be seeing at retirement parties down the road. These are the folks that you're starting your career with. So a lot of you may remain friends after orientation today or in the future. These are folks you can also leverage for best practices and ideas as you go out to your different work locations. Now, all of us together, though, as we work here at the company, are working towards one common goal. And that common goal is that we create happiness by providing the finest of entertainment for people of all ages everywhere. This is pretty big statement to think about for a minute here. You know, happiness. We all create happiness. Each and every one of you, every day in your roles, are going to be creating that happiness for our guests. And so that's our kind of our mission or our long-term goal here is to go out there each and every day and making sure that we are firing upon this statement, and we are truly exhibiting that in our behaviors and our actions when we do our jobs day in and day out. So one of the tools we have for your job that we're going to give you is the four keys. We're going to give you a lot of tools. I'm going to be sharing a lot of information with you today, given our 8 hours. But one of the tools, one example, as you can see, it's a keychain. And this keychain is going to be at your fingertips for you to constantly reference back to and to ask yourself, what are the standards or what are the decision-making parameters that I need to think through when I make a decision on the spot in my work area. And there's four, as you can see here, depicted with several different types of keys. The first is the D, the cursive D, which, as you'll see in a moment, is for safety. You see it listed there first. And the name tag represents courtesy, because we all wear our name tags to be very courteous in our onstage locations. It's one way that we're courteous to our guests. The star is the show, because the show is the star. And then last but not least, the cogs that form Mickey Mouse's head are for efficiency. And these four keys are equally important, as you can see, equally sized so that they are all part of our experience as we as cast members go out and make decisions. So I want to get a little bit more in depth on these four key basics. We actually have for you, and you have it in your resources too, examples that exemplify each of these four keys, specific behaviors that we're looking for you as a cast member to exhibit. And the first one you'll see is safety, and a lot of folks will say, well, that one's all capitalized. Why is that? Well, safety is the most important for us. It is our non-negotiable. And so to be safe, we have to practice safe behaviors in everything that we do day in and day out. We also need to take action and put safety first if we see an opportunity to correct a safety issue somewhere, maybe a slippery surface, maybe a child up on a guardrail. And then also we speak up to ensure the safety of others. So stopping guests, stopping fellow cast members in their tracks so that they are going to be safe versus going an unsafe route. Next up, the basics around courtesy. So we have to be courteous. We have to project a positive image and energy at all times. Again, we're on stage, our guests are seeing us, even backstage as well. We need to be very positive in our roles. Also be have courtesy and respect for all of our guests of all ages. And we have guests here, young little toddlers, all the way to guests of all ages, even those that are more mature, if you will. All guests, regardless of age, be respectful to each one, each and every one of them at all times, and then go above and beyond to exceed guest expectations. So every one of those guests, exceed them at every level possible. The show, we have two basic ideas here. One is to stay character at all times and perform your role in the show. So if you're a pirate, Pirates of the Caribbean, probably don't want to see you on Main Street USA. You know, so your role in the show is very specific, location as well as how you act. And you're also going to ensure that your area is show ready at all times. So is there trash on the ground around you? Making sure it's cleaned up. If there's a spill somewhere, calling the right folks to come out and assist with that. And last but not least is the efficiency piece, making sure that you perform your role efficiently so that most of our guests can experience it, so we get the most out of our attractions or our shows, and also our dining locations, restaurants, and merchandise. So you help assist with that, and also be able to use your time and resources wisely. So again, being smart about when you come to work and using those resources effectively day in and day out. So these basics are all going to help support you in your role as you go out there and execute and perform some Disney magic. But I want to share with you this idea of our applause. How many of you are going to be working out entertainment? Who's working in the parades? Okay, very cool. Well, parade folks, every day, day in and day out, you're probably going to have folks at the end of the parade who are going to do what? They're going to cheer for you, or the show, at the end of the show, absolutely. Yay, great job! That's your applause. Who here is going to be working in housekeeping at the hotels? Very cool. And when you're working in housekeeping, after you finish a room off on it, is someone going to be out in the corner going, great job, yeah? No, they're not all the time. You may see a guest from time to time, but in general, some of your roles may be backstage or may not be in a stage setting like being in entertainment or in parades. And so our applause is just that. It's that constant reminder. It's that constant thank you for doing what you do day in and day out. And while some might experience it and be reminded of every single day by our guests, all of us as cast members must find our applause, must find our way to remind ourselves why we do what we do and what our successes are. And so when you're going out there cleaning rooms, making beds, you can hear that applause in your mind. You know, this is what I'm doing it for. It's for this family. It's for these guests. It's for this day. So as cast members, I challenge you to find your applause. What does it look like for you? Because each one of you will have a different applause in mind. So something to think about as we continue on. And a reminder that you make the magic. You're the ones that do it. You've been given this wonderful honor of perpetuating the magic that we have at the Walt Disney Company, a legacy started by Walt Disney himself. And so you're the ones that are now going to be tasked to go out there and make that magic come to life for our guests.
Say it started very small, as most dreams do. A twinkle in an eye, the thrill of something new. Then the dream began to grow and come alive, touching every one of us, lighting up the skies. Now the dreamer is the lucky one, his heart, that all of us are children, believers from the start, in fairy tales and fantasies of 100 magic years, filled with pixie dust and princess. princesses, our favorite musketeers. We share a magic day, we share enchanted nights. It's a never-ending story that together we all write. It's been a part of me, it's been a part of you, a part of
So, welcome to our Disney family. Congratulations, everyone.
So, I just want to ask you a couple of questions. The first one is, how do you feel?
Good.
Happy.
Good, happy, welcomed.
Motivated.
Motivated.
Excited.
Excited.
Inspired.
Inspired.
When do we start?
When do you start? And you saw like 15 minutes. It's an 8-hour class, and the class is high energy the whole time you're together, facilitating that. I mean, you go home at night, you just want to go to the quiet place, because all day long you've been, hey, how's it? You've been like, for 8 hours, you've been that way, and it's intended to be that way. Very high energy, lots of visuals, storyboarding activities with pictures to put our history. We give them pieces of history and we say, try and put it in order. They don't. They can't. That's okay. It doesn't matter. You know, we show them a video that then helps them put it in order. The first part of the day is the past. So we need to impart the past, the heritage and traditions, the language and symbols, the shared values. That's all part of the past. The middle part of the day is the present. And the present, that's where we talk about traits and behaviors. It's where we talk about the basics, the four keys basics, because that's something they'll be responsible for when they get to their area. The third part of the day, we talk about the future. The future are all of the things that are the what's in it for them. What are the discounts you can be a part of? What does free ticket admission look like? You know, because you know they're sitting there all day long thinking, can I get a discount on a Disney cruise? The whole day they're thinking that. You know, and it's, yes, you can. And here's what it, you know. So all of the what's in it for them, all the perks of being a Disney employee, we spend the last third of the day talking about and sort of building that excitement up. Now, at the very end, nobody has their name tag yet. And at the very end, it's pretty loud, too. You'll kind of hear on the door. And it interrupts the facilitators from talking, and they're kind of annoyed and go to the door, push open the door, and who do you think comes in? Mickey. And Mickey comes in with a big gift box. And as he comes in, he's shaking this big gift box, trying to figure out what's in it. And when he opens it up, what they find out is it's all of their name tags. So Mickey's there to hand them their name tag and welcome them to the family. Now that's emotional engagement. Now at every park around the globe, it's actually not Mickey. In Hong Kong, Mickey doesn't come. In Hong Kong, there's someone who's even more respected and honored and revered. And it is the Hong Kong Disneyland Ambassador. We choose ambassadors of our park every year. We've done it for years and years and years because Walt Disney couldn't always be at everything to speak, so we always had an ambassador, you know, that could, you know, speak on behalf of the theme park. So at Hong Kong Disneyland, it's the ambassador that knocks on the door and that comes in with their name tags. But that's emotional engagement. And that's what that day looks like, that 8 hours. There is no signing employee policy manuals. There's no, you know, here are the 15 ways that you can get fired. Let's tick them off. We don't do any of that. It feels kind of good, doesn't it? It's a very happy day. They do not go through. You do not hear all of the details of Delta Care, our dental provider. You do not hear it. No. But you get an overall sense of where we came from. You get to see Walt, you know, some videos with Walt. And it, we're very lucky that we were a film company, because there are so many films of him. You know, you get a sense of, you know, sort of the company from the beginning. Then in the middle, you get the, you know, the stuff that you have to do. But we put it in a real colorful way, and we, you know, the four keys, and that's how we do service. And you don't have that in your workbook. I know Ryan mentioned it. I can during the lunch. If you want that slide back up, because you wanted to notate anything from the basics, just somebody holler and let me know, and I'll put it back up during lunch. If you wanted to jot anything down. So that's your tradition today. And from there, the next day, you would go into your line of business training. So you might come back to Disney University, but instead of being just everybody together, then you would be just the merchandise people together, just the foods people together, just the housekeepers together, just the front desk people together. From there, you're going to go to local orientation. So wherever it is you're going to be working, whatever hotel or theme park, and you're going to have one day where you get to know that place. Where do I put my lunch? Where do I clock in? How do I get a costume? Where are the bathrooms? You know, all of those things. Then you're going to have your on-the-job training. And you're on-the-job training with a Disney trainer. So we're going to get to the rest of that learning journey, but first we thought it might be good if you ate. Are you hungry? Okay. Is it okay with you if I shorten your lunch just a bit? Is 45 minutes okay?
Yes.
All right, 12:45, we're going to be right back here ready to go.